Hey, what's up, guys? This is Lucas Burnley. I'm here with my co-host TJ Schwartz. We want to wish you guys all a happy new year, happy 2025. And we're feeling good. We're getting on the pod right in the beginning of the new year. How's it going, TJ?
It's a good start.
It's a
It's
good
going
start.
well. It's going well. We obviously missed a couple weeks, but important things are happening, and sounds like it was a stressful but fun time. At least it was for
Yeah,
me.
coming out of the holiday fog a little bit. We haven't you and I haven't like talked at all. We exchanged a couple texts, but what'd you guys do for the holiday, man?
For Christmas, we stuck around our place, had the in-laws over for dinner and stuff like that, but pretty low key. Kids are at an age where, Santa, Christmas tree, a couple fun things, it's kind of simple Christmas, which is kind of nice. And then New Year's, we went up to, there's a cabin on my wife's side of the family that we went and stayed at for New Year's Eve. And that was really nice. That particularly
Sounds
was really
like
relaxing.
good speed. Ours was slightly more frantic. Basically like finished work and then drove 14 hours to LA. Super proud of the boys though, because we did Bend to LA straight shot one day,
Wow.
and I couldn't believe they did it.
Yeah. You
Four
held
and
up.
seven, they held up. We did
That's
three
good.
bathroom breaks and
Wow.
three refuels, which is
That's legit, dude.
it was legit. It was like long haul. There's like these, I don't know, man, like with kids, there's like weird stuff where I get like disproportionately proud of them. And driving, like, just like, oh yeah, you can do this, is like one of those things.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I
Food
can't
is
even.
another one. Like, where if they'll, I'm like, oh, you're down to try this? I'm like,
I know
that's
exactly what you
cool,
mean.
right?
My kids don't eat very many things, but every once in a while,
Dude,
yeah.
we just put it out there, dude. Like, coming back, we stopped and saw Joey and did dim sum, and I've got a picture of Winston just chowing down on a chicken foot, and I'm like, yeah,
Nice.
dude, like he's spitting bones out, and
Cool.
like it's great.
Good for him, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's funny.
It's good, man. But yeah, super stressful. Dude, are you like fairly tied into holidays? This is like a weird thing that I struggle with, like, because I think part of it is not going to traditional school and not like growing up, not really having like a standard flow of in school, out of school break, stuff like that. Is your brain like super like self-employed, or are you good enough to know like, oh, there's a holiday coming?
Yes and no. I mean, I think this was a unique holiday, actually very unique in that they both land on a Wednesday, which that makes it rough. And it didn't even occur to me until it was maybe a week out or 2 weeks out. I mean, I knew it, but like what you were saying, it didn't really click until a week or two out, and I was like, oh no. 'Cause we work a 4 day week, and it's like we're taking Christmas Eve and Christmas Day off. Guess what? That's Tuesday, Wednesday. So that's 50% of the week. And so we went in a little underprepared, I think, partly because there's nothing we could do, but partly because, yeah, it snuck up on me. But I don't know. I can see what you're saying. It was momentum. You want to keep your momentum as an employer or as just a business person in general. And especially in a month like December, a Q4 when you're selling direct to customers, kind of the busiest month of the year in a lot of ways. So yeah, there's a definite tug of war there of like the holidays are important. I have kids, I have a wife, I have family.
100%.
Cannot be, overstated how important that is to me. And so it's like there's really no scenario where I'm gonna like work on Christmas or something like
No,
that.
no way at
But
all.
yeah, it snuck up on me a little bit, and it was definitely pretty brutal. I mean, once I was out of the shop for like 12 hours, 24 hours, I was like letting go. But then that the problem with that is I'd work Monday and Thursday and did that both of those 2 weeks. So it's like both times I go in, let's say Monday, get like just frantic, just race pace, do as much as I can. and then let it go, knowing I'm behind. Come in 2 days later, do it again, but see how much further behind I am all of a sudden. And so there was like, it was 4 days of work across 2 weeks, like almost equidistant from each other. And it was almost like the worst possible situation because you're reminded that you're behind, like very vividly when you're trying to get stuff done for a day. And then you go take more time off. And it's like, man.
And it may it like messes with your brain, right?
Yeah, it
Like
was.
you do you think you would have been better off just not working those 4 days and fully enjoying like whatever the 2 week cycle, or were they necessary?
They're necessary. We had to work.
It's rough, man. It's like, well, and I look at it's not the time off necessarily. Like we run into a thing where we get bleed on either side. And like especially with travel, like there's just no smooth, at least not for us. There's you lose a couple days on the front side, and then you get back, and it's like you're putting pieces back together. What are you doing all the laundry? You're like getting groceries. It's just like it turns into much more than just like oh, here's a Christmas break. And I've been trying to figure this out for a while because like obviously I don't want to work all the time. I don't want to work through holidays. Like there's no version of that. But at the same time, you're like with like Christmas, it's like, man, we cranked right up until the end because we're a small business and it's Q4. And there's a point where you're like, what does that mean to a flow? Like, is it reasonable to be like, okay, cool, now we're gonna like wheels up and take off for somewhere else? You know, this Christmas is one where I definitely felt like just staying at home and like having like quiet Christmas would have been kind of the thing. But it's tricky, man, because like the kids are small, you like the family is away. You want to like do the thing. I don't know. It was an interest. This one was interesting because I got back and I just like felt it where I was like, man, I'm tired. But
We kind of got into a bit of a pickle, to be specific, because we got the X9 grinding, but there was here's the dilemma. There is when I knew we were like within a week of getting it grinding when it was getting all set up, and so we didn't want to mill any more knives with bevels because then you'd be stuck with a whole bunch of knives that are done the old way. So we started to taper that off and we started to build up on a few knives that didn't have bevels for the grinding. But if we had knew if I had a crystal ball and I knew that that was going to work, I would have been stacking up blanks that don't have bevels for like the last month. But you can't do that. You can't like pigeonhole that much value in like Magnica and heat treat and time just to find out like this is not working. Like we do have to do it the old way because then you're stuck. So it was like we needed to come away from the machine starting to grind with like a surge to develop a large inventory of like ready to grind knives. But we'd started grinding the week before Christmas. So it was like the 2 weeks we were gone are the critical weeks to get a whole bunch of knives to heat treat. And it's like we literally can't make knives until we get them back from heat treat. You know what I mean? There's no, and the problem is there's a lead time with heat treat and they're down on two days a week. So it was like we have to just stuff the hopper with like as many of those knives as we can. And we just got them back. And so really it's next week that we just start grinding like crazy.
You just start
And
running.
so we kind of have a bird in the hand now. It's like we got the heat treated blanks, we got the grinding. Everything's ready. We were able to do all the sheets and all the scales and be kept up on everything so that we just start grinding and then we just are finishing knives. But the anticipation of like, okay, when are we gonna, we got this beautiful machine grinding. When are we actually gonna use it? You know what I mean? So that was
Dude, it's
kind of
an
limiting.
interesting. I think like last year there was enough changes that there's almost like this little bit of, it's like a little bit of like a busyness, like traffic jam where certain things are working so much better than other things, and then other things have like naturally fallen behind. It's really, I was telling you before we jumped on, like I get around any holiday, I seem to get really reflective. And I think for me, it's just like they're markers in time. I used to think it was only my birthday. Like
Yeah.
I would like be real quiet. I would spend birthdays by myself. Like I'd do all this weird stuff, and I realized I'm like, no, it's actually just these markers throughout the year where there's like a big celebration or something. My brain kind of starts to put together information, I think. And that's, I
I feel
think,
the
I
same.
right?
Yeah, I feel exactly the same. Yeah.
Because it, I don't know, maybe that's just like a human nature thing where you're like, oh, celebration is marking time. And so, like, for certain people, like, you probably, when you're marking time, you're also looking at like the time leading up to and like the time in the future. New Year's being probably like the one where everyone is like looking towards the
Yeah.
future.
Well, and humans like a story, right? And it's
Right.
like we like buttoning things up,
Yeah.
just not literally, but just from a just emotional standpoint of like,
Yeah.
okay, what was the story of 2024? It's
Yeah.
like we like sort of creating like that narrative arc, and that's definitely
Yeah.
what my brain does. And it's
Yeah.
like you kind of want to start a new story.
Right.
And so it's like, what's the exclamation point on last year's story? You know, I think that humans
Yeah.
look for stories and everything.
If you had to put an exclamation point on last year for you guys, what would it be? It's a big question, so
Yeah,
don't feel like you need to answer.
it was too much,
Yeah.
but we knew it was too much. January 1st of last year, we knew this was gonna be too much.
I'm actually surprised to hear you say that.
And that's just it didn't internalize a lot until, like we said, you know, the reflection of the year. I was like, a year ago we were in the shop in the garage. So, yeah. So we moved, and so that was a big, I mean, I worked weekends for weeks trying to get this
Yeah.
shop ready. That was pretty brutal. And then we got in here, and just started pounding pavement, just getting ready to, you know, just speeding up. And it was kind of what I discussed at the time when we moved, is like there's a blessing and a curse of the more space,
Yeah.
is that in the garage we had a natural barrier to overgrowing. It was like you can only buy so much stuff, you can only hire so many people.
Yeah.
And then we, you know, grind through the move, and then we just kind of break free. It's like you just have an open field in front of you. And it's like that creates a situation where, of course, I stomp on the gas and had success doing that. And then, you know, the build up for the X9, getting the X9 operational. You know, and then on the personal side, like I had my sister got married, so I took a week off for that. So summer was busy just for a lot of different things. And so finishing the year was almost like I wanted to put together this shop for the future. And it feels like we kind of did it all in 1 year. And because I look at next year and I'm like, we don't need another machine, don't
Right.
need to move. And I almost felt this huge sense of relief. I was like, I didn't even realize it, but I feel like I just compressed the whole project into 1 year for the most part. And so it feels very rejuvenating looking at the next year of like, we're still going to be pressing on the gas, but we don't have to do anything crazy this year. It's like we did all the crazy stuff last year.
That's a good place to be. Yeah, I feel the same. I feel like I did too much. I don't know if I would do it any different. The
Same.
pro I think where I'm stuck at right now is like figuring out what elements actually were the too much, right? And that is like it's really tricky. And this we've talked about this a little bit where it's like when everything is valuable, what do you leave behind? And I guess it's that question of like, what do you say no to, right? Like at a point, good, an opportunity can come down the line and you can say no to it because you're like that, it's not enough of a gain, right? Or it's not enough of a gain for the time required. There's a lot of like, I think, you know, criteria that could go into that, but I can't, I looking at it like right now, I can't actually figure it out. And a lot of it is also fairly small overall time commitment, but there's a lot of time commitment. So trying to like figure out for 2025, I almost think my overarching goal is like figuring out where I can focus more, but that means that I have to do less. And that feels
Yeah.
weird.
It's like the old less irons in the fire trope, you know what I mean? It's like,
Dude, it's
yeah.
well, and you know that that is not like, and you've said as much, like, that is not my strong suit, right? Like, focusing on one thing for a very long time is not probably, is not like my overarching strength. But it's when you have work that require, like, I'm seeing it with the Kihoku right now, where I'm like, yeah, this one thing is becoming efficient enough that I have to put more time into the next layer of like
Yeah.
efficiency and
Yeah.
refinement,
Continue to mature it. Yeah.
continue to mature it. And I'm like, to do that, I have to not be doing something else.
Yeah.
But I can see that over the arc of like almost my entire career, where it's like, it's an eight, I get things to like an 80% point. And I will run them there, but I will also start the next thing.
No,
And
I've
so,
been guilty of that.
dude, I think it probably, I think the awareness for me this year is that I'm doing too much to do alone.
Yeah.
That is, which brings in like a whole nother layer of complexity, because that
Yeah.
means that I need help. And adding help means that I have to slow down to train help.
Yeah, that's always the sticky business, is like you gotta take two steps back to get to where you can move faster, and that when you feel like you're just hitting the rev limiter, it's hard to slow down. That's,
My
I felt that way all year.
dude, my friend Josh, from Good Art, which actually this is like a fun segue. We were talking and he's like, dude, you're in bricklayer stage. And he's like, you're right now, you're a bricklayer. And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, well, you can go to the job and you can lay the bricks and you can finish all the work, you can make the money, it's great. He's like, but if you hire someone, you have to slow down to train them to lay bricks, and you're going to lay less bricks. He's like, but then you're not a bricklayer anymore. And I was like, I'd never heard it put quite like that. And I really liked that analogy.
Yeah.
Incidentally, while I was in LA, I went and saw Josh and Rachel at their foundry in LA, which was probably like the single most restorative element of the holiday, which is telling. But dude, their business is so rad.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know much about them or have like
Not
crossed
really.
paths.
Not
Okay.
really.
Basically, dude, like you go in and it is, they're a, like a fully US-based jewelry company, casting foundry, like insane creative space. Like they take really good care of their employees. Their space is like aesthetically beautiful. And the work is so freaking creative. I think they're probably about 30 employees. They are not in the bricklayer stage. It's rad.
30 employees, huh?
30 employees. It
That's
was
legit.
real. I went in. It was just Josh and Rachel were like hanging out, and like everybody was off for the holidays. But dude, I just had no idea of like all of what they were doing. The craziest thing though is just like how much care and attention to detail is put into like every square foot of the factory.
That's
Like,
cool.
dude, like he like there's like cast silver hinges in the doors. Like
That's crazy.
everything is potted. So you've got, and they have like, they do silver with leather. So they have like an on-site leather worker with a leather shop. And it's in like this really cool, it's like sectioned off with like these like welded steel and glass doors. Like everybody has like a space. They have like these big common areas for people to hang out. Like you can just see that like culturally, they probably have like a pretty amazing work slash creative culture
Yeah,
by
that's
almost
cool.
by necessity.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I was gonna say that's a style of brand that you have to have, like, fluidity. Yeah.
It was rad, and they're like bringing in like old equipment to do like make their own chains, which is like lost Like some of it is like lost art, like equipment where you're buying something from like the 50s or 40s and like essentially like re-putting it into a production line. 'Cause there are machines that like, if you go to like the East Coast, you'll go to like Gold's machinery and you'll find entire production lines for sale where a
Wow.
jewelry manufacturer went out of business. But a lot of those machines were like built, modified. So you have to have the
Yeah.
knowledge to get the machine back online. It's really cool.
That is cool.
So yeah, that was a bit of a digression, but that feeling of like being so in the work that you can't like get the next step rolling is like, I think that happens in knife making a lot. And I think we've probably talked about this, but like I just look around and I know the tendency to just be like so busy that you're like, I can't actually lift my head up to like take a step forward.
Yeah, and that's the metaphor I've always used is like if there's one guy on a ship who has to shovel the coal and steer it,
Right.
it's like you can't, the mode switching is just
Right.
not, it's not tenable forever, you know what I mean?
Right.
So that's a definitely a goal for me. All, you know, in the same vein of it feels like, you know, I delegate, hire and delegate, but then you hit another rev limiter where you have to delegate again. It's kind of
Yeah.
like a step function, you know.
Right.
Kind of definitely arriving at that point again because it's it gets harder to steer, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Progressively.
Well, and then it's like it almost seems like it becomes the people. And I asked Josh, I was like, and I asked you too. I'm like, who do I hire? Right? Like, what's the first? And this is, it's weird because I've hired over the years. It's just that right now there's enough moving parts, and like with the kids and like with what the business is doing, like it's almost like it feels like starting over in my brain. And I've got this like decision fatigue around like what the role is. And Josh mentioned, he's like, dude, hire someone that you'll teach everything to. And I thought that was really interesting, especially like certain industries are kind of like there's gatekeeping that goes on. I think the jewelry industry is one of those, like much more so than knives. But his point was essentially, he's like, if you're not hiring an employee that you think can do all of the jobs, he's like, don't bother right now. And I thought, I don't know, I thought that was like an interesting take.
Yeah, that's an interesting take, and I like it a lot because I remember
Right?
when I was shopping around to hire my first guy, and when I eventually hired Dalton, I was thinking about it a little bit wrong because I was thinking about hiring for, I was like, what are like three tasks I can put them on, and then just that's what they can do. And it was like after I hired him, I realized I was like, oh, he can do just about everything, and
Right.
it's a huge testament to him. But it also is kind of illuminating on like the mindset wasn't quite right because it's like when
Yeah.
you only have you and you're
Yeah.
trying to delegate, you have to have someone who's like a true multi-tool. You know what I mean? They have to be, you have to be able to delegate in a very broad sense. And it's not until you have, you know, 10 plus employees that you can really get someone who's like, oh no, I need strictly a bookkeeper or I need
Right.
just someone to run this one machine or whatever. You know what I mean? It's
Yeah.
like, you kind of, I think I was envisioning that, and then it wasn't really computing that it's like, well, you're a long ways away from that. You need, even now, like I have Steven on board, and it's like he does a lot of different things. You know what I mean? It's just a few hats in a big room with a lot of work to do. You know what I mean?
Right.
So,
But
yeah.
you guys, the nice thing is that, like, theoretically, like you guys have essentially like the tribal knowledge to where my thought, and I've never reached this point, but my thought has always been like, you get to a point where like one of your primaries is the one who teaches the next hire. It's like Dalton is teaching the next,
Oh,
you know,
definitely. Yeah.
that to me seems that is like just like a force multiplier. You know who I would love to have on here? For as much as we've talked about like having guests on the show, we've really not done it. I would love to have Dave Wattenberg from ProTech on multiple reasons. One, he's just like a genuinely decent human,
Yeah, I really feel that way too. Yeah, he's
right? But
legit.
also, I love when I went and visited their factory, it really tracked as far as like it's like visibly recognizable in like small states of growth, and like the employees love it, and he like cares for his employees, and like you look and you're like, it's not some major, or it wasn't when I saw it last. It's been a lot of years since I visited, but it was like recognizable. It's like, oh, there's like five C Haas CNCs and like, you know, one CNC grinder, but they figured out how to run like two ops on it. And it was just a really recognizable, cool company. They kind of feel similar to me, like in what you're doing, where they're like, we want to make a really good product. We want to have like reasonable pricing. We want like really good consistency. And I mean, I think it's an awesome company. Maybe we can like put that together.
Yeah, that would be really nice. 'Cause
Right?
I've talked to him a couple times, but it's one of those things when you're on the floor at like a blade show or something,
Yeah.
it's not the chance to break through at all. It's like I
Yeah.
just, politeness and just,
Yeah.
look at his work and, something kind of it just like that superficial, like in passing blade show conversations you have with people. But I just looking at what he's built, it's like I'm sure he's what an interesting guy if you sat him down, you know what I
Well, and
mean? So.
I think there's like some anecdotal stuff. Like I think his origin, like I think his dad maybe owned like a knife shop. And
Yeah, I think
this could be
so.
totally wrong, but this is
No, I
what I
think you're right.
think. Okay. So I think his dad owned a knife shop, and I think at some point either he was like modifying automatics or had like started to like build the aluminum automatics. And I don't know if it was him on his machines, him outsourcing to a shop. Like, I don't know any of that. And that is like where I would be so curious to kind of like really dig into that.
Yeah, I know he was like a school principal.
Yeah. So,
Yeah.
all like those things where it's like you're coming into this, you're a principal. Like, that's a pretty cool. I
Yeah,
just see
yeah.
every post I see from them is like super positive. Like, I think I just
Yeah.
saw like they had like their an open house. And like, dude, that stuff, it's like,
It's good energy.
it's just good energy. Like having your community in, having like the employees around, like, you know, I love it. Okay. I want to try. That's a goal for 2025.
I like it.
So, yeah, dude, I don't know. I'm like, right now, like I said, I'm just kind of in this like reflective state, and like right this moment, putting things back together, like I'm playing catch up. And so in a certain way, I don't actually feel like I've like slowed down. Like the holidays weren't a slowdown. They were like a change of energy. And right now I'm trying to figure out like where in like the month, early in the month, can I actually slow down and like sit with my thoughts and look at what I want for 2025? You know? Do you like do that from like a New Year's resolution standpoint at all?
Do I make New Year's
Yeah.
resolutions? I don't believe in them fully, but it's
Same.
tempting. I can't say that I don't do it to some degree, though. I like thinking about the new year in terms of how I can contrast it to last year. I don't know if I think about it in terms of like, I'm not gonna, drink this soda or, whatever. It's like, it's
Right.
not as obvious and simple like that. One of mine is like 2024, I designed zero knives.
Wow.
Zero.
Yeah.
And I look at 2025 and I'm like, that won't stand.
That won't
So
stand. Yeah.
it's a little bit of a change in direction as opposed to like I'm abstaining or like, some of the more generic ones, I guess. But that's how I look at it, is like, how can I change the direction here, like shift a little bit? And that's one of
I
them.
like
That's
that. Shifting energy.
one of the biggest ones.
We talked about that a little bit, which was like you don't feel like you need to push super hard in growth. But that time frees up a little bit of this extra energy, which for you can be design work. Here's a fun one. I'm still constantly playing with ChatGPT. I really, really love it, right? And I've always sought counsel. I like the idea of having a resource to go to like just run questions through. And recently I had this, I don't know what I was basically, I'm reading a book on manufacturing in America. Really, really interesting. It's basically around this hoodie company. And it's talking about kind of the decline of US manufacturing, how NAFTA worked, like all this stuff. It's really interesting. And I realized I'm like, ADHD brain goes, huh, I read a lot, but I don't necessarily feel well read. And so I ran this question through ChatGPT and I said, hey, I didn't have a traditional education. What classic books like are would someone read to be considered well read? And it basically like spit out this pretty comprehensive list.
Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance.
Yeah, of course. It's like,
Was
I
it?
mean, it like
Yeah.
starts, and what was interesting, the way that it breaks it down, because you're like, oh, okay, like here are the classics, right? And it's like the Iliad and the Odyssey.
Yeah.
Dude, I never read it. And so I basically had it create a course structure for me,
That's interesting.
but then I had it prioritize. I was like, where should I read these? Like what order? And it gave me this breakdown of like, these books give context to this next cycle of books.
Oh, wow.
And then I asked, I was like, okay, in a school setting, because you wouldn't just be, I was like, I wouldn't just be reading them, right? I'm like, what work would I be doing around to like integrate these texts? And it gave me this like kind of thought process around like asking the questions. And like some of it's like fairly obvious. But so far, it's been one of my favorite uses of ChatGPT because it gave me this really actionable kind of list. And so that's like a 2025 goal, is to
Yeah.
start working through this list of books
And internalizing them and
and internalizing them.
applying them. Yeah, that's interesting. I like that.
Yeah, it's because I think a lot of it is like they tie into overall worldview. Learning how to learn, understanding like basic concepts. I mean, like some of it is like just basic concepts of like Western thought process,
Yeah.
you know? And I'm really excited. So
Yeah. No, that's cool.
I started yesterday.
I might have to
So
jump in on that a little bit. I keep trying to read other books and I just always fall back to history. I
see,
just,
I'm the opposite.
yeah.
That's you have that as a base, kind of like I read technical books and I read like Harvard Business Review stuff and like, but it, I realize I'm like, it's really not broad spectrum.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I need to branch out a little bit.
What are you reading anything right now?
The Forever War
The
is the name of the
Forever War, yeah.
book. Reporter in the Middle East, 90s up through, 2000s.
Insane.
Yeah, so interesting.
Nice.
I just started it, so yeah, can't say too much, but
It's pretty good.
yeah, I can't get away from conflict, like geopolitical conflict. I don't.
What do you think it is? Like, what's so sticky about it for you?
Oh man. I think it's because it's like there's almost nothing that matters more
Yeah.
as far as human existence.
Yeah.
And we take that for granted. I feel like that a little bit. It's like, it's, I mean, famine and casualties and migration and
Yeah.
where people are and why they're there. And like, it's just. The origin story for all of us is so entangled with war. Like it's
Yeah.
inseparable from who we are. You know what I mean? And we've
Right.
had this streak, at least, in the United States, where
Up
it's
to,
like
yeah.
we're not in touch with it, and it feels like almost primal to read. Like this is what, World War II was like. This is what the human experience was like. Even, I've gotten more into like the Roman Empire and things like
Yeah.
that. And it's just interesting to see human patterns at scale. I don't know. It's interesting to me.
Have you read the Iliad?
I took a mythology class in high school, but it was a sophomore year, so this is way back. So I have like some basic knowledge of it, but yeah.
It's interesting because like the I'm reading the like the introduction to the book right now,
Yeah.
and this specific like translation, the guy is like giving a lot of context to the time and this shift from like the oral tradition to like written story, and but also like in the context of war, and you look and you're like, dude, it's the exact same thing. Like they're giving context to human existence based on like war, then like the 600s. Like it's insane.
It's like if you've, this is going to sound super nerdy, but if you've ever played Fallout 3, the video game,
Oh yeah.
it's like the famous phrase from that is like, war never changes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's really true. I mean, yeah, the tools of the trade change, but man, it's a human condition. You know what I mean? It's super
Human
interesting to me.
condition. That's a weird, I feel like that's a weird ender for the pod, man. I
Shoot.
don't know.
I don't know. It kind of sums up the way the last couple of weeks have been, though, is like in and out of a lucid state. You know what I mean?
No kidding, man. Yeah, that really is. It's kind of fugy, like loss of time. We did yesterday, we did a day with the boys where we were like basically, I don't sleep in. Like, we all slept in. We basically all stayed in pajamas. We just had like the TV on and food and like did nothing. I don't think we left the house. Like, we just, and I could see that like everybody needed it. We just like, Bo wanted to play video games. He gets like really limited video game time. We just let him run it. And he was like so psyched. I'm like, it's interesting, man. You just like little, these little phase changes, like shifted around. We got SHOT Show coming up. Feel like we're kind of scraping the bottom of the barrel. This one, when we were jumping on, I was like, man, I don't got a lot to talk about, but felt good just to like get on and chat.
I am meeting with my CPA today, and I'm going to talk to him about him being a or his group being a bookkeeper for us.
Okay.
So that's an interesting thing that I'm really excited
So
for. So.
that's a pretty big shift. So you'll have a essentially a bookkeeper and a CPA, which
So
is,
the
that's huge. That's what I have.
main thing is I've hired, I guess what you call a business advisor, Mike. I've talked about him before on
Oh wait,
here.
I want to, can we dig into that a little?
Because
Okay.
it's kind of at his behest or at his suggestion to get
Yep.
this bookkeeper. And the reason is when you go on like QuickBooks and you allocate all your own expenses, I mean, it's easy coming from being a self-employed person where you're kind of alone. You're the only one who looks at these numbers really. And it's like, you know, what you allocate them as doesn't really matter to the IRS inside
Right.
of a certain field. So it's
Yep.
like, is it cost of goods sold or is
Right.
it some other overhead thing? Is
Yep.
it, and it's like, it's all the same tax wise. So it's not like
Right.
there's any fraud there, nor they care. But where it came to light is like when Mike, he's a former CEO of a few or former executive of a few large companies. And it's like, he looks at what I have exported from QuickBooks, because I'll do like a profit and loss statement, cash
Yep.
flow statement. And he looks at it and he's like, these aren't right. He's like, they're definitely not right. And it's not that I categorize the expense myself. So I know I'm not like fudging it as far as trying to save money on taxes, but
Right.
as far as what the expenses actually are,
Right.
they're not right. And so it's like, he kind of told me, he's like, I'm going to have a little bit of a hard time being super effective if I don't know these numbers and what they really are. And so part of like to improve his effectiveness and another thing he pointed out was like, you want to be a bankable company, is the phrase he used, which means you want to be able to show up to a bank and that someone behind like a business desk who's like going to finance you for a building or whatever, they're going to look at something and immediately smell that it's like, these are numbers aren't right. And even if they're not like saying you're fraudulent, it's just if you go in there and you say like, I have a professional bookkeeper, these are professional reports,
Yeah.
you're more bankable, you can, you know, have outside help more easily, because it's a universal language as long
Yep.
as those numbers are actually right and they're categorized correctly. And also by extension, just getting that off my plate, it's like, why am I our bookkeeper? You know what I mean? I don't know
Right.
anything about
That's not
bookkeeping.
your like, it's really,
And
so
nor do
I've
I care to
struggled with
be.
this too, right? Which is the business is still small enough where I like knowing my numbers. And so I went through this. I've had the same accountant for 10 plus years now. And she, when I met her, she was actually, I hired her to tutor me in QuickBooks. And it might have been hiring her to teach an employee in QuickBooks, which is really interesting. But she basically, the way we do it now with QuickBooks is I still go in and do like the banking like allocations. Okay. But we a long time ago, we set up the categories because I had a lot of the same questions. And she's like, it really only matters how much you want to know, like how granular you want to get with your business. And like, is this an office supply? What office? Do you want to know how much you're spending on paper, or do you want to know how much you're spending on office supplies? So that's a really good question that I will ask her now, which
Well,
is how would this become more bankable?
and one of the main things I think that's interesting as far as is it an office expense? Is it cost of goods sold? What's this? What's that? That's interesting and important, but I think where it really got to the meat was if you look at like a, and I'm still learning, he's kind of teaching me about this, but if you're looking at like a cash flow statement and like your balance of accounts and stuff. So in a corporation like we both have, you have cash-based accounting. And so it's like, it's almost like you're constantly accounting sort of the net worth of the company. And it's like your liabilities are subtracted from your assets in real time. And that's not just for like, oh, that's interesting. That's actually for tax purposes. Because a company can make more money without looking like they made more money because they increased their asset pool. And so it's like that it's kind of a catch-all for like how much bigger was the overall value of your company, including revenue and assets. And it's like that gets a little bit muddy because it's like you have to account for values of equipment and things in there. And so what has been,
Inventory, equipment, you're doing depreciation. So that she can basically that is all set up in there. She and basically what we do is I do the day-to-day stuff because she's not on site. So it's really hard for her to be like, what is this order from Amazon? So I would be going in there anyway and having to be like, oh, okay, like from Amazon, I ordered this replacement part for my airline. I can do that part. She goes in and does all the reconciliation. So it's kind of a hybrid process. I at this point, I'm more accurate probably in actually being able to categorize every expense or like credit, but she is able to put it where it needs to be.
And that may be exactly what I actually need. Because the way it's worked is I do all the you know, putting the associating the transactions with their respective categories. But what's been happening is like at the end of the year, I give these QuickBook reports to the CPA, and then he has like his file of what our asset situation and loan situation is, and he does that reconciliation at the end of every year. But that leaves all the numbers in the meantime, like sort of in no man's land as far as how it applies to the depreciation and all that. And so it's like I need him in the loop on a more frequent basis so that these reports are actually
Quarter
accurate.
basically quarterly is what we do.
Interesting.
And it's well, I want to know a couple things. One, I want to know if what I'm paying into estimated taxes is enough or if it's going to drastically change. I want to know if there's a point where like maybe there will be extra money or a good reason to buy a machine, something like that. The number one reason I do it though is because of getting into situations where, because I don't watch money in that way where it's like, oh, we made enough money that it completely blew our estimated tax estimates, and I'm gonna owe a lot more. If I know that every quarter, I'm way better off than finding that out at the end of the year.
You can get into big trouble.
And
And
I
I'm a
have,
little
like, I've been like, oh, like I gotta come up with an extra, $50,000. Not ideal.
I've been worried about that because this year we had a lot of expenses, and we bought a machine that's a big asset to depreciate. We you know, paid quite a bit of money to get everything moved into the shop, and there's like I've been close enough on the books to know that we're not going to get absolutely slaughtered this year, but I worry. I'm like I said, next year I'm not buying a machine and we're not moving, so that's part of the gist here is like. We got to be ready for this, you know what I mean? If we're going to kind of get into this like rhythm of truly operating like a mature company, we got to do it the right way. So it's overdue, but it'll be helpful, I think. So I'm excited for that.
Hugely, dude, it's It's one of the interesting things about like small business and like this figuring it out yourself is with any type of scaling, not knowing what you don't know in regards to like the next level of scaling. So like I'm seeing it right now with the Kihoku, where I've never had to think about timelines and like production flow and other people's flows because I've
Supply
always
chain
been,
management.
it's supply chain management and I have no experience with that. The highest level I've done is like making sure that I have the tooling I need to run parts, making sure that I have enough steel to like make the next batch of knives, but I'm doing small amounts. So it's, you know, it's like, oh, I'm out of, oh, I forgot to order CPM 154. Like, oh, good thing I have like a sheet of CTS XHP or something. You know what I mean? It was like always small scale, but now I'm seeing with like this stuff where it's like, oh, okay, I'm sending things to water jet, I'm sending things to grinding. Like it is much more involved. And that's where we're talking about this idea of like being busy. Where does it come from? And you're like, just these small things, the conversations that you're having, like they all take up these little blocks of time. And then you're like, oh, it's just like, it's a lot.
Supply chain management, procurement. That's kind of what's gotten me starting to run out of time in my week.
Is that something? Is that a position? If that's true, if you're running out of time in your week for that, is that a person? Is it shop mom? So shop mom is also that dude. That's the move.
That's the move because we've built a system where pretty much everything is Kanban, except for steel. And the reason steel is very difficult to Kanban is that you don't just order it. You've gotta order it. You gotta have it water jet. You gotta have it surface ground. You gotta have it machined. You gotta have it heat treated. Then you bevel grind it. Then you finish it, laser it. You know what I mean? It's like where would the Kanban be exactly? And so I've kind of taken the tack of like I just need what I call supply chain saturation, which means you need to have like the rail cars all lined up so that there's always the next one coming. And having like your finger on the pulse. And so I feel like I can handle that. But the things that are Kanban, it's like that's already on autopilot. There's no reason I should be doing that. You know what I
And
mean?
even the steel at the point where you have a process, like knowing you, I would say that if you have shop mom, that is fully within, because all it is ordering the steel. Okay, the steel is going here, sent here. Okay, you get the notification. Okay, it's going here, then it's going here. Then you're getting an email that the steel is showing up from grinding. I mean, that if that is on a weekly level a pain point, that's just one more reason to have that person in
Yeah, that
place.
person that yeah, that's the main quote unquote acquisition of the year ahead, I think, is that person. So it'll be interesting.
It's pretty fun. Okay. All right. So we both need an extra person. I'm going to start actively working on it. I'm going to try to figure out the pocket this year. The problem is like, it's already like, I've got Blade Show West. I've got Blade Show Atlanta. I'm like looking, I'm like, I don't know where the pockets is. And this is where like the harsh realities come in, where it's like, I may actually have to shift time and like not do something in order to be like, okay, I can free up a 2 month block of time that I would otherwise be like in show prep. But then after that point, I become more efficient. Maybe that's the deal. Okay. You want to wrap it? First year wrap? Okay.
How about that for a chaotic
Feels
wild ride?
right. Feels chaotic. We
Feels, yeah.
just wanted to jump on, talk a bit.
That felt good though.
I
It was
did,
nice to get
man.
back on track.
It did. Thank you guys for listening. We would love it if you would drop us a comment, leave us a re review, let us know if you have any New Year's resolutions, anti-resolutions. Appreciate you guys.
Appreciate it. Peace.